Welcome to this portion of Vocal Point. I'm Jerry Newcomb, and right now our guest is a returning guest, Dr. Peter Loback. He and I wrote the book called George Washington's Sacred Fire. And in this particular segment, we're going to focus on the issue of slavery and the founders, going beyond just George Washington, who we discussed in a previous program, was a slave owner by tradition. And it was the fourth generation of slave owners. And by the time he died, because of Christian convictions, he let his slaves go. But let's talk about slavery and the founders. Dr. Loback, so good to have you back on the program on Vocal Point.
I love to talk to you because you're such a good friend, and I love the topic we discussed because we've labored long and hard over it. So it's good to revisit.
Sure. Okay. First of all, let's start with this. The Declaration of Independence says all men are created equal. And obviously, black people experientially were not included in that for almost, a couple hundred years, which is really terrible. But I understand that in the original draft that Jefferson wrote, that then got modified by the founding fathers themselves, because they wanted it to be accepted by all the 13 colonies, there were even some anti-slavery statements in the Declaration itself in the original. Are you familiar with that?
Yes, I am, and it's absolutely correct. The original version with the amendments, the edits, the deletions that were made by the early gathering there at the Continental Congress can be found online. If you actually type in, do a search, you'll discover, if you say the Declaration of Independence of Jefferson, its original form with that, with deletions and edits, something will come up and you'll be able to find it. Now, what's interesting is that Jefferson, of course, was a slaveholder at Monticello in Virginia. He had a large plantation, so he was just part of that Virginia culture. But as he was given the responsibility to think about the new world that he was going to help create by the independence of the states, he had enough foresight to ask the question, if we want to be free men, what does that really look like? And it included in his mind a need to tell the British leadership that they were breaking not only from the tyranny of the king, but they needed to end slavery in the new country that they were giving birth to. It's a very powerful statement. And so we are told, according to some of the analysts, that as the debate ensued, and there are perhaps some would count as many as 80 changes made to the draft that came in from Jefferson primarily and the others that worked with him on that document, that what troubled him most was the deletion of the ending of slavery in his Declaration of Independence. And that means that Jefferson was looking not only for a new country with a new set of values for all of the people who lived in it, but he was ready to face the future, realizing it would personally impact himself. So when he was talking at the end of that we're ready for this great act to let it cost our lives, our fortunes, and our sacred honor, he realized his fortune was on the line because he was potentially going to lose even his slaves, but that's how much he was committed to the freedom and the new making of a new country. Now, that did not happen. It means that he ended up being a slave owner to the end of his life, but at the end of his life, he was so far in debt, he didn't own much of anything. And I think, if I hear the story correctly, much of what he owned, including his slaves, were sold to satisfy debts that he had accumulated in his lifetime. So he did not end as a rich former president or as a famous founding father, but he ended up as a famous founding father that was in debt. So that's a sad thing. But it meant, though, at least, he was not on principle a slave owner come hell or high water. He was prepared, and he actually advocated that this would be the case. So that's important. We might be able to say something like this. Jefferson may well be the first American political leader in writing to recommend that slavery end. And that's a pretty significant place in legislative history. And he did it in one of the most famous documents of our country, the very document that gives birth to our nation, the Declaration of Independence. That meant, though, why did they change it? Because the southern colonies were still convinced they could not survive without slave labor. and therefore they opposed it. And how could you have what they hoped would be a unanimous declaration if they had certain states that said, we cannot support this? They fought hard to get that unanimous language, and that meant they abandoned Jefferson's vision for a new country with no slavery.
Isn't that interesting? Because today you've got some people, iconoclasts, hey, that's a good word for them, that are saying, hey, tear down the statues of Thomas Jefferson at the University of Virginia, which he founded. Some people have said, I am so ashamed to see that statue of Thomas Jefferson. It's like those statues of Robert E. Lee. We got to tear those down.
Right. Well, Jerry, I'll ask you a question, because you have also worked very hard on the life of Thomas Jefferson. I think you co-wrote a book called Doubting Thomas. I might have had the chance to write the foreword to that, if I remember
yes,
right.
You did.
And I would ask you the question, as you studied the question of Jefferson and his life and how he dealt with his slaves, how would you describe that? Because this is an area of your expertise.
I think actually that the earlier Jefferson was more opposed to slavery than the later one was, only because of the realities of the day-to-day life later. Plus, he became much less ardent in his professed Christian faith, and he was a professing Christian, but earlier in life, I think you can definitely make the case that Jefferson did, by all outward appearances, including the time that he wrote the Declaration of Independence, which was in 1776. A year later, 1777, he, as a layman, wrote the subscription, that is the founding document for the creation of an evangelical church, where they called a patriotic evangelical minister who had been ordained as an Anglican, the Reverend Charles Clay. It was called the Calvinistical Reformed Church of Charlottesville. It kind of disbanded after the war or whatever, but he wrote up the prescription. He said, we being desirous of gospel knowledge, blah, 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 that's why we're starting this church. In our book, Doubting Thomas, we have two sermons from the Reverend Charles Clay that Thomas Jefferson himself helped support this guy's ministry financially and morally and spiritually and in every way. He was very supportive of it, and he also profited from the man's ministry. We have two sermons. They've never been in print, any of his sermons, Charles Clay's sermons. And when you read them, they're just gospel preaching. It's like, whoa, this is what Jefferson supported, as a young man in his 40s at the time. Don't tell the ACLU. I mean, this is pretty radical. Or I misspoke. Maybe that would be his 30s. He was born in the 40s, 1743. So we're talking about in the, 1777. But this is important to note. When he wrote the Virginia Statute for Religious Freedom, which he wrote in 1776, it wasn't passed until 1786. And it was passed when he was in France. But he basically said that because of Jesus, whom he called the holy author of our religion, we shouldn't force any kind of state church on people, because all we're doing is begetting habits of hypocrisy, and we're departing from the plan of our holy author of our religion, who, being Lord both of body and mind, chose reason to propagate his faith, not coercion, as was in his almighty power to do. Now, as to the issue of slavery, Jefferson even wrote early on, during that more Christian phase, about how, every slave owner is like a mini tyrant, and it's a terrible thing. And, basically it's unchristian. And even that phrase from Jefferson where he says, I tremble when I consider that God is just and his justice will not sleep forever. You can't help but feel he's wondering about slavery. And he's more like he himself is a slave owner. But then as time goes on and he becomes less Christian, less committed, and less thinking of the Christian, it reminds me of the old joke from Woody Allen, where Woody Allen goes to see a psychiatrist and he says, my sister thinks she's a chicken. And the psychiatrist says, well, why don't you talk her out of it? And he says, I would, but I need the eggs. So in other words, there's a kind of a practical sense in which Jefferson was reliant on slavery. He did have the vision, and he even helped support the Kentucky something or other resolutions or whatever, which he was trying to get it so that as future states would be added, they would not be They would not have slavery as part of them. He did support some anti-slavery efforts, but he sort of felt like this is a battle that will be won someday, but not in my lifetime. And yeah, so that's my summary of Jefferson.
Point. Yep. I think it's a good point. When the Constitutional Convention comes along, the issue of slavery obviously became very important.
Oh, yeah.
And once again, the issue was struggling, can we win that one now? And they realized they couldn't. If they were going to create the way forward, this was such a part of the culture that it could not be ended at that time. Doesn't make it right, but that was the pragmatic assessment of where they were. And I think that probably happened then with Jefferson. He said the visionary new beginning, let's do it. When it was not possible, he just said, well, what are you going to do? This is what we've got.
Yeah, you know what, that's, excuse me for interrupting, but in, you think about William F. Buckley Jr. articulated the principle that you, in terms of like voting, you vote for the most conservative candidate, the one with the, you know, who will do the most good, that has the highest likelihood of getting elected. So in other words, you might have a perfectly wonderful candidate who's godly and stands for all the right principles, but they don't have a chance in the world to get elected. Then you have this other person who's very flawed in many ways, but they basically stand on Christian and conservative principles, and they do have a shot at getting elected. You vote for the second guy, not the first. That's what he's saying.
So then, if I can add another dimension to this, obviously when we talk in historical settings and the art of the impossible, we want to simultaneously say the tragedy of slavery is not minimized by these evaluations.
Correct.
It was tragic. We just wish it had never happened, but it did. And with these are steps on the way to its ending, and that's why we're grateful for them. Not because they're wonderful, but because they are, in fact, moving us in the right direction. So slavery has been a reality, and if we could say it right now, there are slaves today all over the world that are sold into slavery due to religious reasons, due to just sheer power and money reasons, but sexual slaves and other forms of slavery continue to exist at this very moment. And we should not be hardened to that because we're so mad about what happened in the past. One of the things I often wonder are those who want to rectify historical failures, are they willing to recognize that what they're so angry about in the past actually could be addressed right now by trying to help someone who's still experiencing it? The very thing the person who is so mad about doesn't experience, but he's mad about their forefathers that did. What about the people who are in slavery right now? That would be the true moral conclusion if you want to change things, because you can't change history, but you can change the present and potentially the impact of the present on the future. So I'm wondering why we don't hear any passion for ending the slavery of the sex slave or the Christian that's being sold into slavery by Muslim raiders and that sort of thing. We should be deeply concerned about that.
That is,
we're concerned about slavery in history.
I totally agree. We have less than a minute to close. You just mentioned the Muslim factor. You know, this is politically incorrect, but it's, there are many reports of, you know, Muslim slave trading to this day, even though technically it's supposedly illegal. I personally have interviewed a former slave from Sudan, and the only way he got out was by escaping. His name is Francis Bach, B-O-K, and he even wrote a best-selling book. He came here to the United States, and but he's a former slave, but there is... genuine slavery in parts, you know, of the Muslim world, and it's a terrible thing to our day.
If we could even be bold enough to say it, in many of our big cities, there are people from Eastern European countries that are in sexual slavery as well by gangs that have used them for sex slaves and sustained them by drug abuse. It's a reality, and we should be very concerned. So one of the things, if we care about this issue, let's have eyes to see its reality right around us, even in America, in our big cities. There are people that need to be loved and cared for.
All right.
Potentially freed.
And on that point, we'll end. Dr. Loback, thanks so much for being with us on Vocal Point. I'm Jerry Newcomb.